Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Ben Coleman, president of Aerospace Management System Institute in Lakeland, Florida, who is today's host.
Welcome to the 40th annual Sun and Fun Fly-In and Exposition. Beautiful downtown Lakeland, Lakeland Linder Regional Airport. I'm Ben Coleman, one of your hosts here with Florida Aviation Network, and it's always a pleasure to be here and come across some, make new friends and see some old friends. Not necessarily old, but friends that have been around a long time. Because our gentleman that we have with us here by no means is old, but he is an old friend. So, Steve Oliver.
Thank you, Ben. My pleasure. I just turned 68. I don't feel old.
So you know, Steve, the older you get, isn't it funny how that works? 68 used to be real old, but now it's not. I used to think 50 was old, but I'm just a pup at 50.
There you go. But feeling better every day.
Oliver Flying Circus. Tell us about what Steve Oliver is flying. And I think, Steve, the last time we spoke, you had a beautiful puppy that was up there with you. Had a dog up on the, and followed you around the country and the
Pax.
Nation. That's a girl.
Pax, at 17 years and a few days, flew west on September the 11th. Ironically, 22 years to the day that our first famous dog, Charlie Brown, who was my air show dog when Suzanne and I started the air show skywriting and stuff, she had passed on September 11th. Really ironic. I think they were talking to each other.
22 years.
Yep.
Apart.
Yep.
Well, Pax, she was a sweetheart. Are there any other mascots?
I'll tell you, as any dog lover knows, it just takes a while to get over them. And my wife volunteers when we're home. She volunteers full-time job at the Pima County Animal Shelter and just goes out there. And that's her way of getting through this thing. And you know, we've got a lot of friends.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you. She was sweet, and everybody in the business knew her. Let me interject something real quick. You were talking about being the 40th anniversary. If anybody looked up in the sky yesterday and today, although it was hard to see today because of some overcast, but they would have seen a big smiley face and then 40 and then Sun and Fun for Happy 40 Sun and Fun. And that's our little gift to you all for the great things you've done.
Oh, that's great. And look, it's the volunteers. The FAA, both Obie and I both left the FAA, but we're continuing on with the spirit of safety and aviation. And as far as aviation, Steve, you've been in this thing for
50 years.
It's a good long haul.
Yeah.
And
Barnstorming,
how are you doing with the Barnstorming rides?
Barnstorming is great. We have our 1929 new standard four-passenger open cockpit biplane here, which was designed and built specifically for Ivan Gates that owned the Gates Flying Circus back in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. It was the largest barnstorming entity in aviation history. In 1929, they took over 100,000 passengers for rides. And remember, they didn't have airports. They would just go land in farmers' fields and things like that. So he had this plane specifically designed for him. He was a smart guy, carry four instead of two and double your money, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Of the 50-some built, there's only eight flying, and there will never be very many more than that, maybe 10 at the most, because what happened is after the barnstorming era passed in the 30s, who would have used for that airplane? Crop dusters.
Yep.
Because it's the same thing. They're just hauling lots of fertilizer to sit a lot of people. But this airplane is 100% restoration, except for the heart, soul, and baggage compartment. It's every piece on it is brand new, built exactly as the FAA requires to the original standards, original blueprints, which we have. So it's probably the oldest, newest new standard out there anywhere. But
well, I love the term new standard, because back in the day, they call it was a new standard of bi-wing aircraft.
Well, actually, the J-1 standard, which was a competitor for the Curtis Jenny back before the war, like 1916, 17, was designed by Charles Healy Day, and they called it the standard, standard J-1. He happened to be the same designer 20 years later or 10 years later, that Ivan Gates went to design him. And in fact, the very first one was called a Gates Day standard, because Ivan Gates and Charles Healy Day. And then it was such an incredible airplane for what it did, barnstorming, that they started getting requests, people wanting to buy them. So they formed a company, and in honor of the original standard that Charles Healy Day had built, designed, they call this the new standard. So that's where it got its name. And it's a D-25 as model D for Day, and it was his 25th design. So that's pretty much a story on that. We're operating off the grass strip as we've done. We started the ride hop operation here in 1982, which this was a pretty small event in 82, and you were 7 years old.
Yep.
And from little acorns do great oak trees grow, and we've been here watching it and performing. They had so few performers the first few years that I would fly three different acts in three airplanes just because they didn't have enough people to fill the bill. And then, of course, with all the help of these wonderful volunteers and the people of the powers to be, you made it what it is. And, obviously, people are beating down the door trying to get here to fly and stuff, so they have wonderful showcases.
Steve, your routine in the Chipmunk is always, are you still doing that routine?
Oh, I am, yeah, absolutely.
And, I haven't seen you, you're not going to be doing it this year here.
I just, it's the 26th year for the Chipmunk.
Yeah.
I flew my first show in 1965. I think the only person in the business that has flown longer is Eddie Andrini, and he beat me by 1 year, and he's from California. No, I just finished a big show with the Blue Angels and everybody out in Lancaster, California, which is just north of Los Angeles. So that airplane is at my home in Tucson. We brought Sky Magic, which is a one-off that we built. Everybody thinks it's a Cub on steroids. It's 300 horsepower, 23 mile an hour stall speed. But it carries a lot of pyro, and we'll be one of your performers Saturday night, tomorrow night, during the night show, where we actually put pyrotechnics on the airplane, fireworks, and go up and do our routine, and fireworks are coming off, and we have a canned scripted storyline and music that goes along with it. And so we really have a good time. We enjoy doing it.
Well, I tell you what, 15, 20 years ago, Steve, would you have thought that you'd have seen things get to this level as far as technology, GPS, all of the things that are going on right now in aviation?
You know, I can walk through, of course, not, I'm not a tech guy, a tech savvy guy, more of a gearhead, but anyway, you walk through these things and you look at the navigation stuff and it's just boggling. And it kind of, you know, I've got my 496 in front of me all the time, and then I got, what is it, ForeFlight or something on my...
Yeah, ForeFlight on your app,
and it's
on your
just,
phone.
It's, there's more information there than you know how to get. And I honestly say, how for 50 years or 40 years did I do it without this stuff? You know, with just a map and a watch and,
And just heading out this way, and wet compass and go.
Yeah, it's a different world out here.
It sure is, but it's... And in many regards, we like to think that it was a lot safer. But, you know, I've come to a realization, Steve, that in this business, you can take all the technology, you can take all the performance in an aircraft, you can have the absolute best of all of those worlds, but without that decision-making skill, and you do it and don't even think about it or know it, that you've been flying so long and even the weather, or maybe your left knee don't feel good someday, and you feel like, okay, I'm just not going to fly today. That's a decision. How do we impart that to the new up-and-coming aviators that are just chomping at the bit, 10 feet tall, bulletproof, can't die, airplane's not going to kill me? How do we impart that knowledge that you have amassed through the years and try to share it with them without shoving it down their throat or, again, rejecting
that? You know, I think... I refer to myself and my contemporaries as old-timers. We learned in a completely different... I mean, I was doing aerobatics as a student pilot on my own, and it wasn't a big deal because it was just different there. I was fortunate enough to grow up in the Missouri, Kansas area. Of course, Kansas was the birthplace of aviation, but the hub of that kind of flying in the 30s, 40s, 50s was Wichita and everything around there. And it was a lot different. I think what we need to do is us old timers that know things that aren't even taught anymore and that they don't know because there's been too many generations and too many years, we need to keep imparting it to new students and new people. I just had a long conversation with a woman and her son out at the biplane ride thing. She was getting him a ride and she started talking to me about how he's really interested in airplanes and just want to learn to fly. And I always preach that to people who are getting ready to learn to fly, I don't care what their age is, get your first training in either a tailwheel airplane or a sailplane, one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because you learn and it makes your feet work. Not only does it make you a much more competent pilot, because you can transition to a nose wheel in a heartbeat, but when you advance to complex maneuvers that require coordination, like chandelles and lazy, your feet already work.
You don't even have to think about it.
Right, and literally the money that you save on extra dual that you'll need to learn how to get coordinated won't need to be spent on that because you already learned it from day one.
It's cost effective. And
absolutely.
And Steve, I can be going somewhere in an airline and you've been going down the runway. I can tell whoever's on the controls, I can tell if they've got any stick time or not.
Oh, yeah.
you too.
Yeah.
You sitting in the back and you feel a bit.
Yeah. Just, you know, one of the things that I say, and I'll say it to anybody, and if they want to get offended, they can, but it's the truth and they know it. The hardest person to transition to a tailwheel airplane is either, generally speaking, an airline pilot or a military pilot who isn't a sport pilot and is not tailwheel proficient, because basically compared to a tailwheel pilot or a sailplane, they've never had to use their feet in their life. So the first thing you have to, they can fly an airplane, but they can't taxi from the starting point to the end of a runway, and you just, and they're so advanced in so many areas, but boy, you've got to take them back to day one.
That's right.
And say, we're going to start over again. And don't feel bad about it, because you're not the first one.
I tell you, everybody that I have any potential of an influence on, companies-wise, as a matter of fact, the company I'm working with quite a bit up in Virginia, they've got a Cub that they make available to the employees to fly for nothing.
Wow.
If they want to learn how to fly, it's called
That's the Cub Club.
Yeah. And it's just the only way to do it. Well,
go ahead.
My little piece fell out. Go ahead.
You may know this. I'm not an active instructor anymore, and haven't been for several decades. Quite frankly, because I require too much.
Yeah.
And I just was told this morning that the FAA has a new rule for flight schools that, in addition to all the normal flying things that you would have to, you now have to complete a certain amount of tailwheel and aerobatic training, upset training, and you're going to have to be able to do, like, you have to demonstrate that you've done five spins in each direction and stuff like that. And I'll tell you, he was telling me that the people that build the Great Lakes and the Waco, because now that Great Lakes is starting to sell to flight schools, because the flight school needs an airplane that can A, do aerobatics, and B, have us old timers been preaching that for 50 years?
Well,
and beating our head against the wall, we're so excited about the fact that that's now.
And I call myself a whippersnapper, and I've even been trying to be that. So maybe our constant effort has been paying off.
I think so.
Steve, I'm going to recommend that everybody go out and get a ride out there. And if you're sitting there in your living room, come out to the airport and meet this man.
And my wife, the famous Skywriter.
Absolutely.
Pepsi Skywriter for 25 years. We're in the center, parked right beside the thing, operate off the grass strip, $60, carry four at a time. We'll be here today and tomorrow.
The show's over. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Ben. Good seeing you.
Oh, it's right there. And we'll see you back here. And it's thank you for having us into your living room or your car or wherever you're seeing or hearing this.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.